So welcome everyone to the Parsha class on Parshas Vayetze, 5765. We are studying the Parsha under the guidance of Rav Yerucham Halevi Lubavitch, of blessed memory, sainted memory, who was the Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual dean in the Yeshiva of Mir in Poland. And his writings are like a Bible of, pardon the expression, of Musar teachings from the weekly Parsha. Musar being the study of Torah with a bent towards spiritual and character development and self-improvement. We have been hoping that this year, with the study of Rav Yerucham's writings, that we would have a continuation and an amplification on some of the concepts that we studied last year under the guidance of Rav Eliyahu Dessler, also a great Musar teacher of previous generations. And we have found this to be so far. Case in point was how last year we learned about the patriarchs during the book of Bereishis and how each one gave us a gift of a very, very important trait, which is a key to many other traits. And the three patriarchs each embodied one of these traits. Rav Yerucham assured us that each of the three patriarchs possessed each of the three traits because they were shleimim, they were complete. In that sense, they had completed all of the entire range of important traits. But that each one perhaps introduced it or exemplified it more. So, we learned about the three traits with Rav Dessler, and I'm sure many of you have heard about them, even besides outside of this class, as it's well known, that Avraham gave us the trait of chesed, kindness, giving. Yitzchak, the trait of gevura, strength. Yaakov, the trait of emes, truth. Recently, I think 2 weeks ago, or maybe three, we had the wonderful insight from Rav Yerucham about the traits of Abraham and the traits of Yaakov, chesed and emes. There were several verses in the Parsha of Chayasara where the two words chesed and emes were combined. And Rav Yerucham commented on that, how chesed needs emes and emes needs chesed. Kindness needs to be established on the basis of truth. And we spoke about various examples in human relations, how chesed needs to be checked by truth to make sure that we're doing a chesed which is truly a chesed. It's something that the person really needs, etc. And how we have to know how much chesed to do, that must be defined by the bounds of emes. So as an example, we learned from Rav Yerucham's writings more about these midos, about these traits. Somebody made a comment that we didn't talk about gevura, strength, the trait of Yitzchak. And I said to him, good point, I was thinking about it myself. And I said, you know, it's interesting how in the Torah, less is told about Yitzchak than is told about Abraham and Yaakov. We're almost finished with Yitzchak. We really just had very little last week. We learned about Yitzchak, but he kind of goes more quietly. And I said I was intrigued by that, and so are you by your question. Well, today, this week, in the writings of Rav Yerucham, he develops for us the Mida of Gevura, of strength. And really, after all these months, right, of talking about Chesed, Gevura, and Emes, I think really gives Gevura a big build-up. And for us to see the centrality of this Midah and how this Midah is one of the three pillars. I mean, imagine a three-legged stool. Right? It doesn't matter which leg you pull off, it's going to fall. And so as important as we may think Chesed is, or as important as we may think Emes is, truth, right? Gevura is just as important. And without it, it can be argued that the whole building collapses. So what is Gevura? How is Gevura lived out? What are the aspects of Gevura that are so central to Jewish life? That is our topic for today, Gevura. So I'd like to talk about three different aspects of Gevura. One actually is not from Rav Yerucham's writings. I think in my mind it was the simple definition of Gevura, and Rav Yerucham actually expanded it into two other areas. And even though we're not really speaking about Yitzchak, we're doing Vayetze. Vayetze is the parsha of Yaakov. It's interesting. I found it interesting how the Midah of Gevura is built up in the parsha of Vayetze. But no matter, because as we said, all of the great righteous men and righteous women in the Torah exemplified all three. In fact, maybe we could even say that in any story that you will find in the Torah, especially in Bereishis, from the Avos and the Imohos, you can be sure is exemplary in the area of Chesed, exemplary in the area of Gevura, and exemplary in the area of Emes. I would venture to say that you can bank on, that every single story in Bereishis is not just exemplary, but is a foundation stone for these Midos. So the first aspect of Gevura. When I think of Gevura, I think of Pirkei Avos, the ethics of our fathers, beginning of chapter 4, I believe it is. Ezehu Gibor, who is the strong person? Hakovesh es Yitro, he who conquers his passion, his evil inclination, and more powerful than a warrior who conquers a city. And just imagine the person who is insulted but does not retaliate. A person who is wronged but does not take revenge. This is an example of Gevura. We also think of Gevura as somebody who resists the temptation to sin. We think of that as a sign of Gevura, of strength. Well, we have a beautiful illustration of this Midah in our Parsha. And we're going to see illustrations of each of these aspects in our Parsha. The incident I'm referring to is a story which usually the main characters are Rachel and Leah. And yet, it's a very strong supporting role is by Yaakov Avinu. And we're going to see Yaakov's Gevura, his strength here. The story goes that Yaakov seeks to marry, and he goes back to Haran, the place of his birthplace of his father, and he meets his relative, the Suel, who has two daughters and a son, Lavan, and he ends up negotiating with his father-in-law to marry the younger daughter, Rachel. And the agreement is made, and the terms are that Yaakov is to work for 7 years on behalf of his bride, and he does so faithfully. And what happens the night of the wedding? But Lavan pulls the wool over his eyes, and he brings Leah to the chuppah, to the canopy, and Yaakov is led wed to Leah by deception. And he knew about it. He knew that Lavan might try to do this, and that's why he arranged, the Midrash says, that he arranged for a certain password with Rachel, that only Rachel would know, and he would ask her under the chuppah what the password was. He actually anticipated Lavan to do this. But Rachel, out of her great chesed for Leah, when she saw that Leah was being forcibly put under the chuppah, and that Leah would be embarrassed, she gave the password to Leah. And in doing so, she was prepared to give up her role as one of the matriarchs. She didn't know that she was going to end up marrying Yaakov at all. But in order to save her sister from embarrassment, she gave her the simanim. So, in the end, Yaakov was deceived. Now, what would you say, what would you do if it happened to you? What would you do if that happened to you? Rabbi Yerucham imagines. What would anybody do if it happened to them? 7 long years, the possibility to marry your choice, the possibility of not ever marrying her and being deceived. What would you do? He says, imagine. Heads would be flying. Heads would be rolling. I mean, anybody else would be looking for the shotgun. And rightfully so. What is Yaakov's reaction? Vayhi baboker, this is chapter 29, pasuk 25. Vayhi baboker vihinehi Leah. And in the morning, it was in the morning, and behold, it was Leah. Vayomer el Lavan, mazos asisali. Okay. So he said to Lavan, mazos asisali. Halo v'rachel avadati imach. Lama rimisani. So he said to Lavan, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I worked for you? Why have you deceived me? I've read this pasuk so many times, and it never occurred to me what Rav Yerucham says about Gevura. What's the most amazing word in this pasuk?
Which one is it?
Pasuk 25. And it was in the morning, and behold, it was Leah. So he said to Lavan, what is this you have done to me? What's the most amazing word in this verse?
Behold.
Morning.
Said. Said.
He didn't shout or scream.
He talked to Lavan. He asked Lavan a question. Lavan, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I worked for you? Why have you deceived me? He said it. He was talking. He didn't take out a gun and shoot him. He didn't scream at him. It doesn't even say, Vayichar af Yaakov the Lavan. And the anger of Yaakov flared towards Lavan. Do you know, and do you think that Yaakov never got angry? Actually, in this week's Parsha, it says that he got angry at his wife, Rachel, when she said, how come I don't have any children? And he got angry. Wait a minute. He got angry at his wife, Rachel, and he didn't get angry at Lavan, who tricked him into not being able to marry Rachel? The answer is, Rabbi Yerucham said, is that his anger was an anger for the sake of Hashem. Rachel was saying, you, Yaakov, have withheld from me a child. And Yaakov is saying, wait a minute. We don't withhold from each other children. That's in Hashem's hands. You can't talk about Hashem that way. So that was the cause for anger. As far as Lavan tricking him, you know, that was an act of God. It was destined to be. It was a personal wrong. It disappointed him. That's not a reason to get angry. That is Gevura. Rav Yerucham says, where do you think this comes from, this ability to have somebody stick a knife in your back and you just talk to them and say, why did you do it? Let's negotiate. I have a rebuke to say. I have to get it off my chest. This wasn't right. That's gevura. That is gevura of the sort. Control. Conquer your inclination. Conquer your passions. Don't lose it. Don't lose your cool. This is intense, extreme gevura in its finest form. All right. Second aspect of gevura. Now this is where Rabbi Yeruchim goes further. He starts off by referring to actually a concept in the story of creation. In chapter one. Verse 6. The second day of creation. The first day, there was water, and God created light and dark. The second day, it says, "Vayomer Elokim, yihi rokia b'soch hamayim, yihi mavdil bein mayim lamayim." God said, "Let there be a firmament between the waters, and let it separate between water and water." Okay, this word rokia, firmament, what does that mean? Rashi says, this means Yechazek Harakia, let the firmament be strengthened. For even though the heavens were created on the first day, there was a heaven. There was heaven and earth. But they were still moist. The heavens were moist. And they congealed on the second day because of the roar of the Holy One, blessed is He, when He said, "Let there be a firmament." This is also the meaning of the scriptural verse from Job, Eov. The pillars of the heavens were wobbly. All right. What's that? The concept here is that something can exist, but it can be wobbly. It can be moist. It can be soft. Not necessarily solid. Not necessarily something that will remain, or that when challenged is going to be able to stand up. This idea of taking what exists and solidifying it is an integral part of being a Jew. And we're talking about not in the physical sense, but in the sense of faith or in the sense of character. That people can also have certain understanding, certain wisdom, but it can be wobbly. It can be wishy-washy. That I believe it, I know it, but if I'm challenged, it could fall apart. My belief system could fall apart. If I'm being put to a test, I might not be able to be strong. This is an idea which is the need for the Midah of Gevura. Let's give a few illustrations from the Torah. We have at the beginning of the Parsha, of this week's Parsha, Vayetze, Yaakov traveling from Canaan to Haran, from his father to his relatives. He's going to look for a wife, and he's also going to run away from the wrath of his brother Esav. So there's a scene at the very beginning of the Parsha. I'll just read the English. Yaakov departed from Beersheba and went to Haran. He encountered the place and spent the night there. Because the sun had set, he took from the stones of the place and he put them around his head and lay down in that place. Okay. You can just read it through and not think anything of it, but Rashi stops us here. He encountered the place and spent the night there. The story continues. He slept in that place, and he dreamt, and there was a ladder, the famous ladder, Jacob's ladder, with the feet on the ground and the top in the heavens, and the angels were going up and down. And he had a dream. Now, when he woke up, Yaakov awoke from his sleep, verse 16. Yaakov awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely Hashem is in this place, and I did not know." And he became frightened, and he said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the abode of God, and this is the gate of the heavens." Apparently, the place that he slept was the place which would be the future home of the Beis HaMikdash, of the temple. So, this story is told in the Gemara, Chulin, that the Beis HaMikdash came towards Jacob as far as Bethel. This is what is referred to by, in the earlier verse that we started with, he encountered the place. In other words, Yaakov, it's a little confusing, but Yaakov had gone past the place where he had his dream, and then he returned around and went back the way that he had come. So I'll read on in Rashi. If you will say that when Jacob passed by the Beis HaMikdash, why did God not halt him there? He did not set his heart to pray at the place where his ancestors had prayed. Should they halt him from the heavens? He had gone as far as Haran. Once he arrived in Haran, he said, "Is it possible that I passed by a place where my ancestors prayed and I did not pray there?" What happened was he walked all the way to Haran, and then he started to go back, and then it says he stopped in a place and he slept there. And that place was Jerusalem. Wait a minute, he had already gone to Haran. How did he end up in Jerusalem? Because he had gone to Haran, he had realized that he had passed by the place where his forefathers had prayed, and he didn't pray. And he says, "Let me go back." When he went back, Hashem made a miracle and brought the place to him. He set his mind to return, and he went back as far as Bethel, and then the earth contracted for him. So Bethel is somewhere in between Jerusalem and Haran. So he went all the way to Haran. He had realized that he had passed by the place of the temple. It bothered him that he hadn't stopped there to pray on his own. God did not stop him. And then he said, "Let me go back." As soon as he turned around to go back, the Beis HaMikdash came to meet him halfway. It was a miracle. If you read the Rashi, you'll see I didn't do a very good job. If you read the entire Rashi at the beginning of the Parsha, you'll see that God made a miracle to bring the place of the temple to him. Okay, what does that have to do with Gevurah? What this has to do is the following. It has to do with things that are moist becoming congealed. Here was Yaakov. Yaakov was a great man. He had many great attributes. But he missed something. He hadn't gone all the way. He came to the temple and he passed it by. And he came to a point of recognition. I didn't stop at the holy place. I should have gone. He turns around. Rashi's expression is Yahiv Date. He set his mind to return. And once he set his mind to it, God made a miracle. God did not stop him at the temple on his first way through. He didn't. Why didn't God stop him? Because Yaakov didn't take the initiative. Once Yaakov took the initiative, God changed heaven and earth, moved heaven and earth for him. This is what's called, in Rav Yerucham's terminology, kablanus, accepting the task. Accepting the task. A person can have a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom, and a lot of understanding, and a lot of feeling, but it's all moist. It's all soft. what's going to be when he has to do something about it? Is he going to make a move? Is he going to act upon his knowledge? Is he going to accept the responsibility? That is the difference between having a soft heaven and having a strong heaven. That's the difference between having chachma, having wisdom, which Rabbi Yerucham calls, is just like moist. What determines the quality, the measure of the person, is turning that knowledge into acceptance. And once a person makes that point of acceptance, he's a changed man. Then heaven and earth will move for him. That is the second aspect of Gevurah. There's another illustration of this in the Chumash with Aaron. Aaron was chosen to be the high priest, Moshe's brother. And there's a verse, and here I got the verse written down, chapter 9, verse 7 in Vayikra. If you have a Chumash, in Vayikra, Leviticus, chapter 9, verse 7. This is the Parsha of Shemini, when it was really the inauguration of the Kohanim to their service. And the Pasuk says, Vayomer Moshe el Aharon, Krav el Hamizbeach, Ba'asei es chatascha v'yes olasecha. Moshe said to Aaron, come near to the Mizbeach and perform the service of your sin offering and your Ola offering. Usually, the way that somebody would give an instruction to somebody else would be to say, you know, perform, just do it. What is the idea, come near? So Rashi stops on this and says, for Aaron was embarrassed and afraid to approach. Moshe said to him, why are you embarrassed? This is what you were selected for. And Rav Yerucham says, is Moshe have a complaint against Aaron that he's ashamed to go to the altar? After all, it's awesome. I mean, to be the one to bring the offering to Hashem, no one's ever done it before. You know, maybe Aaron was being modest. Maybe he was being humble. And Moshe is saying, Aaron, this is what you were created for. There's no room to be embarrassed or to be ashamed or to be reticent. You've got to go forward. This is what you were selected for. Karav el Hamizbeach. Accept upon yourself. Make this acceptance. Take your knowledge and put it into action. This is what is required of a Jew. Moshe said to Aaron, whatever your reasons are, it's wonderful, it's beautiful, you're humble, you're modest, but you've got to take the plunge. This is what we're here for. That's the point of Gevurah. Gevurah, the strength and the fortitude to move forward and accept. Sorry. To accept the challenge. This is point number two of Gevurah. Point number one of Gevurah is fighting against the urge when you're confronted in a situation to react the right way and not to react the wrong way, although it's difficult, although the natural instinct would be to lash out in revenge or in hurt, but to have the control to accept it. It's God's will. I'm not going to react. That's one aspect of Gevurah. The second aspect of Gevurah is to take your knowledge and to accept the task upon yourself. Not to be wishy-washy. That it shouldn't just be up here. It should be down here in the world of action. Asiya. And that is the second aspect of Gevurah, which we see exemplified so much by the great people of our Torah. Questions or comments? Before we go on to number three.
What is the reason that he saw angels going up and down the ladder? I do not understand that.
That what?
Why angels were going up and down the ladder. Does that mean death and life?
There's so many different interpretations of that. Rashi says that he was leaving the land of Israel to go to the diaspora, and Hashem appoints for people angels to guard them. And the angels that were going up were the Israel angels, and their shift was over, and then the other angels were coming to accompany him into Chutz La'aretz. That's one interpretation. There's so many interpretations. At least 70.
Great example of Gevurah would be Chana and her seven sons.
Right.
Is there
right.
a book written on the interpretations?
Right.
That?
I don't know. Right. The thing is, Gevurah is not like something extra. Like, oh, he's strong. Gevurah is a must for a Jew. Not having Gevurah is like not having Chesed. Not having Gevurah is like not being truthful. This is one of the core essential, the trio, the tripod of which the Jewish stool stands on the ground is Gevurah. That's the whole point of this discussion, is to see that Gevurah is just as basic as Chesed. Now it's true, Rav Yerucham said that Chesed is the main thing, because in Chesed we're emulating Hashem. Hashem is does Chesed. But without Gevurah and without Emes, no one can be a person of Chesed. This Chesed does not have the support. Now the third aspect of Gevurah will drive the point home even further. The third aspect of Gevurah can maybe be illustrated through another statement in Pirkei Avos. This is also a well-known one. I think it's at the end of the fourth chapter. I'm not sure. But it says that we should learn from the animals how to act. Havayoz kanomer, Rav Yehuda ben Tema was the one that said it. Havayoz kanomer, be bold like a leopard. Vekal kanesher, and light like an eagle. Verotz katzvi, and run fast like a deer. Vegibor kohari, and strong like a lion. Lasos ritzon avicha shabashamayim, to do the will of Hashem in heaven. Okay. So it's basically saying that we have to be strong, we have to be brave. But if you think about it, why do we have to have four different teachers, four different animals to teach us this lesson? Are they all not the same? Why do we need to be like a leopard and also like a eagle and also like a deer and also like a lion? Because each one of these attributes contributes to the total picture of strength. In particular, Rav Yerucham says that he looks at the first one and looks at the last one. Oz kanomer, being bold like a leopard, is that aspect of our character that emboldens us to take the step, to take the first step, like Yaakov Avinu, to decide, you know what? I can't pass by the Beis HaMikdash. I'm going back. He made a resolve. That's the Oz Kanomer. A lot of times, to make a first step is going to be met with criticism or ridicule. A person wants to do something, and what are his friends going to say? A person wants to go to another level, wants to accept upon himself another religious practice. But what are people going to say? What are my own relatives going to say? What are my friends going to say? That requires boldness. Oz kanomer. But here comes the new aspect. It's one thing to make the resolve. And yes, that requires tremendous strength, tremendous boldness. But that's not the end of the story. What happens after we make the resolve? And what happens after we decide we're going to do it? And we start doing it. What happens then? How many obstacles come in the way after we start? We resolved. We ignored the voices inside of us. We ignored the criticisms and the ridicules from the others. And we decided we're going to do it anyway. But how long does that last, that resolve, until the first obstacle comes up, or the first feeling of second thoughts. You know, maybe it was too much. Maybe it's not really for me. Or I didn't think it was going to be this difficult. Or I was unaware of the circumstances. How many of those obstacles are going to come up? That's where you need the third aspect of Gevura, which is Gibor Kohari. If it's the right thing, if you made the right resolution, you've got to carry it until you succeed. You've got to push it through. And there are many examples in the Torah about this aspect of Gevura. And we'll start in with the Parsha of the week. Okay, here's an unexpected one. Rachel didn't have any children. Rachel wanted children. Rachel went so far as to try some intervention. This is after she had that little run-in with Yaakov. Yaakov's anger flared up at Rachel. See, she said to him, "Give me children, if not, I'm dead." Yaakov said, "Am I instead of God who has withheld from you fruit of the womb?" So she said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Come to her that she may bear upon my knees, and I too will be built up through her." There was an idea that if a woman had a maid servant, then she would, and she could not bear children, if she would do the kindness to the maid servant of having her marry this righteous man, that in that merit she would also be blessed with a child. And so she gave her maidservant to Yaakov, Bilhah. And Bilhah had one child, and his name was Dan. And then she had a second child. And this is what Rachel said. Rachel said, chapter 30, verse 8, Rachel said, "I have twisted with turnings to God to be like my sister, and I have also prevailed." And she called his name Naphtali, because Naphtali comes from the same root as twisting and turning. In other words, Rashi says, the word Naphtali comes from the word psaltol, as related in meaning to be obstinate and twisted. I was persistent. I beseeched with many beseechments and turnings to the omnipresent, to be equal to my sister. What is Rachel saying? I prayed like the dickens for a son. And one after the other. Leah had one son. I prayed even harder. Leah had a second son, a third son. I never stopped praying. I didn't give up. I didn't throw in the towel and say, "Okay, God, I guess you don't like me. I guess I can't do it. Finished. I'll be childless." She didn't do that. She continued, she persisted, she was obstinate. Rabbi Rucham says we learn from Rachel from two things. Number one, you're allowed to be obstinate, even to Hashem. You're allowed to be a pain in the neck and keep on asking. And number two, if you do, eventually you will be answered. That's what we learn from here. Where does that come from? Does that come from chesed? Kindness? No. Does that come from enes? No. Well, maybe. But it primarily comes from gevura. Gevura, not to give up. That's what it means. Yes, you have to be oz kanomer at the beginning. You have to be bold as a leopard in the beginning, just to make the resolve to do the right thing. But that's not enough. Many, many obstacles will come your way, and you'll think you just have to turn around. What happened when Abraham was told to bring Yitzchak as an Akedah? We don't know the whole story because the Chumash doesn't relate it. Do you know that Abraham and Yitzchak came to a place where there was a river, and they couldn't, there was no other way over the river to get to Mount Moriah? The Midrash says that river was just a creation of the Satan, of Satan, to get in his way. Not to stop him, but to see if he would turn around. And Abraham said, "God told us to go, we're going." We have no, there's no question. We're going. We'll go into the water. We'll get wet. He went all the way until it was at his nose and mouth. And when God saw that he wasn't turning around, then the satan vanished and the river was gone. Gevura. Only with Gevura will we get there. I just want to close with some statements from just some quotes that I copied down from Rabbi Rucham's writings. Tzarich ha'adam lahachlit ki yamshich ma'asav. A person has to decide, has to resolve that his deeds that he's begun are going to continue. V'lo yachzor liachorav b'shum ofen, and he will not turn around and back up for anything. Muchrach lios, it must be chasal, finished. That's going to be the attitude of a Jew. You know, it doesn't occur to me that this is one of the basic principles of being a Jew, of not giving up. But it is. It's gevura. Another thing he says, and he's talking, he's not talking to the cushy 21st century. He's talking to the hardcore people in Europe. Rabbi Rucham passed away in 1936, and I'm sure the people there were not used to soft, cushy lives. He says, "Kol chulshasenu, hirak she'ein lanu akshonus klal." He says, "Our weakness is that we don't have akshonus. We don't have obstinacy. We don't have stubbornness. Not stubbornness in a nasty way to other people, but stubbornness in our convictions. V'gam hinenu adinim yoseh midai. We're too soft. We're too sensitive." That is the cause of our destruction. May Hashem save us. Yeda adam yesod zeh. Let a man know this principle. She'im hu rotzeh lihiskadel kol shehu. If he wants to be great in any measure, a lovely yos action. He's got to be an action. He's got to be bullheaded. He's got to be stubborn. He's got to not give up. All right. I learned a lot from this. I mean, now it's got to go from the soft, moist thought to practice. But I learned a lot from this. I never realized that Gevura is part of the ABCs. We should know it because it's the Midah of our patriarchs. Chesed is the A. Gevura is the B, kindness, strength, and emes is the C. Without in any either of those, the stool falls down. So that's our lesson for today. We see from here that you don't have to necessarily look to Yitzchak. You can look to any of our righteous men or women in the Torah, and you will see. You will see their chesed, their selfless devotion. You will see their gevura, you will see their strength and their stubbornness. Again, not to be an unpleasant person, because the complete person has chesed and gevura and emes. But you will see all of these three things. And this should be our, I guess, our Musar banner. If we want to know if we're growing and we're conducting ourselves and if what we're doing is on the good path, let's put it to the test. Chesed, Gevura, Emes. Are we acting out of Chesed? Are we acting out of Gevura? Are we acting out of Emes? And then we can be assured that this is a good Jewish path to be on. Yeah. Thank you.